Ray Ferraro in Vancouver tonight. You can watch it on TSN. I would imagine the hockey base in Vancouver is thrilled with this start. Let's see if they can overtake the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, they're thrilled with it, but they have the they've got enough negativity in their blood to go, it's going to go sour soon. I know it. I know it. I know it.
They're right.
Well, they might be, but that's what they're saying. They're 4-0 at home, and everybody's like, yeah, well, how are they doing it?
Miller out to play it. Being watched there by Ryan. They collide behind the goal. Force free to Broussard. Derek Broussard back to Weidman. A shot. A pinball's off a leg. Ryan centers it in. Score. Ryan to Zingle again. And it's 2-0 Ottawa.
What a play by Bobby Ryan, and really, really nice patience by DeZingle.
Guy DeZingle, man. The Habs. The Habs got hurt by DeZingle, didn't they? Welcome back. It is the Irish Embassy pregame show. Why don't they send some of those smoked meat sandwiches over here? We have time. Face off in less than an hour in Brooklyn. Also, a reminder, if you've got an eye on the baseball game, it's an early start if they get it in at all. When we spoke to Rich Griffin in the last 20 minutes, it already started to rain in Cleveland with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. And those voices you heard, of course, Ray Ferraro on this show yesterday, and right on cue, the Vancouver Canucks got shut out with Ray working the game with this guy.
Gordon Miller on Melnick in the Afternoon. Brought to you by Wrangler's Premium Performance Cool Vantage Jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Gary Price. Choose Wrangler's Cool Vantage Jeans to be cool and stay cool.
Back in his home province of Alberta. How you doing, Gordon Miller?
I'm doing very well, Mitch Melnick. And you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Got a hockey game and a World Series game supposedly at the same time, but it's not looking good in Cleveland.
Yeah, it doesn't look good in Cleveland, does it? Did you see the thing on Twitter today about Cleveland and the deal with the Devil? Did you retweet that?
Yes.
Yes. That was very funny.
That was let me try to find.
We'd like a championship. The Devil. You have to host a Republican convention. Deal. The Devil. Trump's the guy. Cleveland, we want two championships. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, that's how rock and roll started, too, the old deal with the Devil. So
before
we get to the Habs and Islanders in a few – by the way, you're hanging around for a while because you got Ottawa and Calgary on Friday, right?
Yeah, I'm here for a couple of days, yeah.
So do you have family there?
My aunt and uncle live here, but they're down in Phoenix. Unfortunately, there's a funeral here on Friday for someone I knew.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes, of course.
So a lot of people are in for that, so I'll see them tomorrow night.
Okay, and of course you've got if there's no ball game, you could keep an eye as well on the. I'm sure you probably actually have this one ahead of the Canadiens and Islanders, and that is Ovechkin and McDavid.
Yeah, I'll be flipping around. What I usually do is on Game Center, I'll put 3 or 4 games up at a time, and kind of watch them. I think it's really interesting. You know, like Ray's comment about the Canucks was a good one. But I would say the same thing for Edmonton, too. They've beaten one team so far that made the playoffs last year. So let's hold off here until you start playing some good teams. Same for Nashville. Like, Nashville's had a tough start to the season. They've got 8 games in October. They're all against teams that made the playoffs last year.
And half the team was poisoned by chicken soup, apparently.
Edmonton's got 10 straight games in November against playoff teams from a year ago. Then, if they're still going then, great. But it's too early yet. You know, you had Carolina go through the West. You had Buffalo go through the West. They're not good teams. Okay. Hold off for a bit.
Okay, but there seems little to no doubt. We don't know how good they will be over 82 games, but there's little to no doubt that they are better than a year ago.
Well, by the law of averages, wouldn't they have to be? I mean, if you keep drafting first over and over and over again, sooner or later, it becomes a room full of monkeys, you know, writing the great works. Like, sooner or later, don't you have to get better by just default?
I think monkeys were involved in the grand scheme of things, actually. I really do believe it. Monkeys and aliens.
Their defense seems a little better. You and I have talked about this before, that good teams...
We've talked about monkeys and aliens before? No, that was PJ Stock, actually.
That was late at night at Hurley's, but we'll talk about that later. But we've talked about how a good team has a good defense.
Right.
And the Oilers' defense does seem marginally better.
With Larson and Chris Russell.
And Klefbom a year older. Nurse sort of settling into it, not a top pair role. Yeah.
What's cranking your chain out of the gate here in the NHL this season, other than, of course, the Habs?
Of course, the Habs. You asked me on opening night what I was looking forward to, and I said young players. And yep. I think even I could not have imagined how good they'd be. I mean, it's just been extraordinary around the league how good young players have been in so many places. And I think it speaks to the way they're trained now, but it also speaks to the difference in the game. And that is there's an opportunity for young players to play now and get a chance when you don't have these clunky guys in the fourth line. You know, teams don't hold spots anymore in the fourth line for guys who can't play. So now guys who can play get a chance.
Yeah, everybody can skate. Almost everybody in the right. NHL can skate right now. It's interesting, you know, not to say that he couldn't play because before he got hurt, he had a very good playoff before he was traded by the Canadiens. Brandon Prust, did you guys tell me that he's been told to just hang around Toronto? Like, I'm trying to figure out where Brandon, he's in limbo, but what do you mean
he went to Toronto on a PTO, and they released him from his PTO, so he's a free agent. And I guess they're kind of, you know, they've told him to be close to the phone in case we need you. But, you know, and I say this isn't a criticism of the people, but like George Parros.
Yeah.
You know, you're better off with a young guy who will give you 12 energetic, fast minutes. I think it's a better game. Now, I will say this. The lack of physical intensity is something of a concern. I don't think you're seeing it in Montreal. The Canadiens are a hard-hitting. When you got Weber and Yemelin out there, you better know where you are and where they are. But, you know, the game last night between Vancouver and Ottawa was a no-hitter. A lot of these games are very free of physical intimidation, and that's too bad because that's an important part of the game.
Well, and you know, when Ottawa played the Canadiens, for example, in their first meeting, it was the Canadiens' second game. That's what Ottawa was. So maybe it's a case of you know, pick your spots here over a long 82, and especially this season, right, with the compressed schedule being as crazy as it is.
Yeah, and I think that it's just the way the game is going. It's so hard to score goals that teams are loading up on guys that are more skillful. There's more room for smaller players. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but you do still want to see puck battles, and I still like the idea of intimidation. I think intimidation is something you can't measure analytically, but it's an important part of the game. And when you talk to players around the league and they say, I play differently when I'm on the ice against so-and-so, that's a factor. There's no question.
Well, it's almost like you knew where I was going to go next.
Radulov back to Weber, backing up, shoots it off a stick, they score! Weber put it off a flyer stick and passed Nason, and it's 1-0 Montreal.
Is that okay? If Shea Weber is getting outshot, and you know that's sort of been the trend over the last few years, so okay, if we know that that's the case, is it maybe not that bad because Shea Weber tends to keep things away? Well, last year when I did this piece, Shea Weber and Roman Josi were like two of the best at it.
That, of course, is Scott Cullen of TSN, and statistically speaking, on TSN.ca. And I don't know if we've spoken to you specifically about this, and I won't mention the second half of the trade here for the next several minutes because I do want to keep it to Weber and the kind of, nutsoid in some circles response to Shea Weber when he's clearly playing well. People's trying to suggest that he's not playing well because of what certain analytics say. So I said, you know, we all know that he's got a bad Corsi, but my goodness, he's playing well. If you're keeping shots to the outside and you're not allowing the opposition to have grade A scoring chances from, let's say, the crease area, then what is the harm in allowing a few more shots, especially with the best goalie in the world?
And maybe Corsi isn't the measure of an individual player. You know, accepting it as a stated fact when it's yet to be proven. I'm not against analytics. I think there's been a lot of interesting stuff that's come from analytics. But until you can show me an analytic that makes Sidney Crosby the best player in the league or one of the best players in the league, he's not in the top 25 in Corsi from last year.
Yeah, I don't know if Ovechkin's numbers are any better.
Right. I mean, I've got it in front of me here right now. I just dialed it up here now. From last year's Pittsburgh Penguin team, Sidney Crosby had the sixth best Corsi rating among the Penguins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all I'm saying is...
It's not black and white.
It's not black and white. And there, I think one thing that things like Corsi have shown us is that it's showing us players that don't belong. For example, guys that are really, really bad. For example, the one thing that the analytics guys showed was that in Toronto, when you had Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr playing, you weren't getting anything done.
Well, but you didn't need now, you didn't need a stat to show you that.
Right. This is what Detroit was talking about in the 90s. This is what Scotty Bowman was preaching in the 90s, and Ken Holland was possession hockey and don't overpay defensive defensemen. You and I had a conversation, it's got to be 7 years ago, about Mike Komisarek.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, you know, I think the Montreal Canadiens can find someone cheaper than Mike Komisarek to do what he does. It wasn't that I had a great insight. It's just that I've listened to those Detroit guys for years talking about possession hockey and not overpaying players who don't contribute by moving the puck. Steve Yzerman's 2010 Olympic team is a great example of not taking Robin Regier, not taking stay-at-home defensemen, taking seven defensemen who were all puck movers.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing new. That wasn't analytics. That was just common sense. So I do think there's this idea among analytics people that this is somehow black and white and that they can demonstrate to you that they're right and you're wrong. The problem with analytics is if you listen to them all the time, you wind up with a team full of Jakob Kindle and Tom Gilbert. Yeah. And that's, you know, and I would say one other thing, and I say this with due respect to a lot of people in the analytics community, they would do their cause a lot of good if so many of them were absolutely one-sided and arrogant about it. That if you don't accept their argument, they just dismiss you.
Mitch Gallo is nodding here. Have you? Why you've experienced this?
No,
Mitch,
I
just share in the.
I just share Gord's sentiment that usually the people who are for analytics are very vocal about it, and they're very condescending mm-hmm. in the way they speak right. to you if you disagree with them.
Well, I would say that you can ask Ray about this. I'll speak a little bit out of.
School, we've had Ray. We've heard Ray's tune on this, and he's
about Tyler Dello.
No.
So Tyler Dello was kind of one of the fathers of hockey analytics, and he was a very acerbic kind of. Abrasive guy. So he worked for Edmonton, and one day Ray and I were driving to the rink for a game, and he asked for a ride because it was raining and there were no caps. So we're driving to the rink, and Ray was talking about the Oilers, and Dello kept saying, "Ray, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. You're wrong. You don't understand." Telling a guy who played in the NHL for 18 years he didn't understand hockey. And I'm driving and just like biting my lip laughing, and all I could think was, we came to a yellow light, and I ran it. Because if I'd stopped, I'm pretty sure Ray was going to drag Dello out of the car and kick him to death.
There was this guy that the Expos were using on a part-time basis, and in baseball, it's much easier to break this stuff down.
Sure.
So I don't want to say he was a Bill James disciple because that's not fair to Bill James. The guy's name was Mike Gimbel, and Dan Duquette later brought him to Boston. He was onto some stuff early. I do give him credit, but he was a weird dude, and he insisted that a guy named Frank Bolick, if given the opportunity, would be a power-hitting corner guy for the Expos, either at third or at first. And we saw Frank Bolick play a couple of series. His bat was slow. He had some power. He had a very slow bat. Anybody with anybody kind of fastball, he wasn't going to touch them. Felipe Alou could see this. He didn't have to read anything. And they kept throwing Bolick in his face. Finally, at the beginning of a series, he put Frank Bolick in the cleanup spot. He went 0-for-4, struck out 3 times. Felipe's message was delivered loud and clear. We never saw him again.
Right. So, but let's not dismiss that analytics have shown us some things in hockey. Save percentage is an analytic. And 5-on-5 save percentage is a really important stat. First save percentage is an important stat. All these things, zone starts, you know, tracking zone starts to see where a player starts. I mean, obviously, if you start in your defensive zone all the time, your offensive statistics aren't going to be as good. Those are all welcome additions. But the idea that this is a magic bullet and that you can, that you're smarter than the GM because you've got a spreadsheet in front of you and you can say, okay, well, this guy's got a better Corsi than that guy. He must be a better player. That's not an accurate thing. And I think that there are some, not all, but some in the analytics community who would have you believe that the numbers don't lie. They do.
I'd like to end it right there. Just before we let you go, Rod, you missed this because Rod's been trying to get our crew in Brooklyn. Technically, yeah. Are we going to be okay? Are they?
Yeah, we're fine.
He goes through this every time, and we have a 7 o'clock start. I lose Rod for like 14 minutes at a time. But Gord is attending the funeral of Jim Prentice on Friday. He was a good friend.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I so admired him as a politician, Gord. I mean, he casted, I'm going to issue a political statement here, but he casted a vote in favor of legalizing gay marriage. And that was seen, he was like an outcast in the Conservative Party for casting that vote. I think he was one of like four Tory MPs out of 100 to do that. And he was always, not always nonpartisan. I mean, he had a partisan streak in him, but he was always willing to embrace NDP ideas or liberal ideas.
I think beyond all the politics of it, I don't profess to have known him really well. I knew him and was social with him. He was a decent person, and I have great respect for anyone in public life who you know puts himself through that whole process, who is a decent person. And I think that he really was. And I think there's lots of people like that in the NDP. There's lots of liberals like that. And I wish that discourse would become a little more genial and a little more civil. But when someone puts themselves out there like that and genuinely wants to make a difference in public life and make things better, we should salute that.
Oh, yeah.
I think Gord had a request last Wednesday, right?
I did. I wanted your caravan. You're going to have Robbie Robertson on, huh?
On November the 18th, yes.
So what's your position on The Last Waltz, the movie? Because
spectacular.
It was a bit of a Robbie Robertson documentary, and a lot of people came away with it thinking he was the lead singer of the band.
Well, anybody who came away thinking that doesn't know music.
Well, but if you just saw the movie and didn't know a lot about music, you might think that.
Yeah, well, you have to actually see him singing it. Yes, he was hanging around with Scorsese at the time. They were kind of like a tag team. Their marriages were both crumbling. And they were hanging out everywhere together. And
I'm just curious.
He was heavily involved in the production. It was a Robbie Robertson show. I know where you're going with this. Yeah, but it was a great movie.
Sure, but Rick Danko was a great singer.
And so was Van Morrison.
Yes. So are you, I'm sure.
We'll find out on November 25th. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
I will not be there. Sounds good.
Cheers, George.
Switch on your electric light. Now we can get down.
Now, because Rod Francis and Mitch Galler were the first people to buy tickets to the 40th anniversary celebration of The Last Waltz, they really were. Rod saw it at my place at a Kill the Bottle party as I was leaving my loft in Place d'Armes. At the church, at the top of the church where they ring the bells. That's where I had a place there. What are you laughing at?
It's quite the view.
Woke up,
it's
a I did.
Great view.
Yeah, and we watched that. Gallo hasn't seen the movie yet. I don't think he's going to think Robbie Robertson was the lead singer. So I'm going to bring it in tomorrow.
Oh, sweet.
So
cool.
You'll be able to see all of it. Tickets available at the Bell Center box office, theatcorona.ca. Friday, November 25th. It's going to be spectacular. The best musicians in Montreal and in the Toronto area are going to come together same night, same day on the actual 40th anniversary of the event. Pat Hickey is moving and grooving and kicking and about to start kicking his legs a la Van the Man. Except Pat doesn't have a purple jumpsuit on. He's back home in the New York area. He's coming up next.